Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and you have tuned into the after episode of a two-part birth story. When we last met today's guest, she was super swollen, 38 weeks pregnant, and starting to freak out about birth. Today, as I sit across from her, not a hint of swelling, and now only one of us has a giant belly. Gillian Scherer, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me back.
Oh, my goodness. First of all, speaking of having you back, I saw you yesterday.
Yeah.
For the first time since you popped your kid out, and we deliberately didn't say anything about birth, so I can find out about it with the audience fresh.
That's right.
So let's go back to the last time we were sitting here in the studio. I think you were 38 weeks pregnant. How'd the end go down?
I mean, the end is no joke, and I think just nature does it perfectly because I had a pretty easy pregnancy, and I was definitely daunted about the prospect of pushing that large object out of that very small hole. But by the end of it, you're so uncomfortable that you don't care what you have to go through to get it out. I think it's designed like that.
Did the large object, small passageway concept, is that something you ever thought about before you were pregnant?
Of course I did, but I know it's a necessary evil. But the reality of it,
I'm just asking because that struck me, like, I think I was like 9 maybe or 8 when I figured out where babies come from. I was like, oh, does it get out of, like, the babies are big and don't they need a better door? So I just wondered if as a girl that occurred to you, like when you figured out where babies come from.
No, I have this vivid memory of watching Roseanne when I was a kid, and one of the kids was pregnant at a certain point, or somebody on the show was pregnant, I don't remember, and she had that freak out where she looked down at her belly and was like, how is that getting out of
my body?
And I was like, oh, yeah, that stuck with me.
Back then.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah, and then I remember at the end of pregnancy, you were 38 weeks, you said you were just starting to get a little freaked out about the whole thing.
I was, yeah. I mean, it's funny, like now on the other side of it, this is a good time to do, I wish I had almost done it a little earlier, the second one, because your brain systematically tries to erase the trauma
destroy the evidence.
Of birth. Yeah, it tries to destroy the evidence,
okay.
I think.
Well, based on just that phrase alone, I'm guessing at one point you said, when I asked you what it might be like, you said, well, maybe it'll just be 2 pushes and it'll be over. So
it was not that.
It was not that. Okay, so at least we know that.
Okay, so to start with, I tested positive for vagina strep, for strep.
Vagina strep.
Which I think is hilarious that your vagina can get strep.
Can get strep, yeah.
I would say I was lazy in like the protocol. You know, I was taking my probiotics, so I thought I wouldn't get it. And I had been told in my hypnobirthing class to put garlic in your vagina and do all this stuff beforehand to really make sure that you didn't get strep B.
Even before you test?
Yeah, before you test.
Just everybody should roast garlic?
Everyone should roast the garlic. That's such a gross way to put it.
Sorry.
Gross. But yes, but you put literally whole cloves of garlic in your vagina.
Peeled.
3 days before. And you continue taking probiotics.
Once you're sharing your protocol, how long was it recommended to you that you leave it?
Overnight.
Oh, overnight.
Yeah. And then you take it out.
Does that leave a lingering garlic?
It might.
You don't know because you didn't do it.
I didn't do it. She did warn that you will probably smell a lot like garlic. But the benefit of it is that the problem with testing positive for strep B, if you're having a hospital birth, as I'm sure a lot of your people here have told you, is that you are required in the hospital then to get a stent and to get an IV with antibiotics throughout your delivery.
So we're going to do an episode with all professionals about medical people on groupie strep at some point.
Oh, good.
You just brought it up.
Oh, I wish I had listened to it.
You can come co-host it.
Okay. I would love to.
But long story short, basically, this is the basic Wikipedia rundown. There are different types of bacteria. One of them falls into the category of group B, Streptococcus.
Right.
GBS. And a lot of people have that as adults. We have it living in our gut.
Totally normal.
Doesn't affect us in a bad way. But the neighborhood where the gut opens up is very close to the birth neighborhood.
Right.
And sometimes it jumps over and forms not an infection, just a colony of group B strep in the vagina. So at 37 weeks, they usually swab, a little vaginal rectal swab, check out if you have a colony in there. If you do, because of the concern that when the baby pushes through there or spends a lot of time, especially on a first birth, it can spend a lot of time in there moving through the birth canal, then they will become exposed to it and could cause an infection for them. So pretty typical protocol in U.S. hospitals is check for it, and if you have it, give you IV antibiotics every 4 hours once active labor starts.
So I was already very bummed about this because I'm weirdly claustrophobic. Like, I'm not claustrophobic necessarily in small spaces, but I'm claustrophobic when I can't get away from something. So, like,
being attached to an IV?
Being attached to an IV for me is very uncomfortable.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Because you said stent. I assume you meant the HepLock.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Yes.
HepLock.
So, so essentially, they poke a hole in a vein, they stick a little catheter that's vein-like in there, pull the needle out, and then put a little heparin in there to keep it
Correct.
From clotting. And it's just taped onto you, but you're not really connected to anything. Does that alone make you feel
that alone makes me feel claustrophobic.
Oh, really? Okay.
So let's say I hadn't tested positive for strep B, then, you know, some people, they try to get you the HepLock when you first get into the hospital anyway, because then if you need fluids, it's easy to get. But I wasn't going to do that. I was going to opt out of that. So that was disappointing to
I'm
me
sorry.
Initially.
Already.
Yeah. So do you want me to jump into birth or we have questions?
Well, no. I mean, you found that out at the
very end. I found
that
out weeks before. Some doctors, I know very few actually, will let you retest. My doctor does not let you retest.
Okay. So meaning if you find out you still could have 2, 3, 4 weeks before birth, maybe then you could roast garlic and
yes.
do the probiotic and tea tree oil, whatever
Correct.
Things, and then retest. But the concern there, I believe, is that just because you're testing negative doesn't mean – maybe you're tricking the test. Maybe there
Correct.
Still is bacteria. So they once you're positive, you're treated as positive no matter what.
Yep.
Okay. So you knew that was going to happen. You were going to have the HepLock and antibiotics.
Yeah.
When in relation to your due date did things start happening?
Not for a week afterwards. So I was due on the 23rd. So then things started happening on the 30th.
On the 30th, literally a week. So 41 weeks.
Yeah.
And your doctor's pretty cool about going past.
He was so cool. There was no pressure. He would have let me go well into 2 weeks. I mean, over 2 weeks, I think.
As long as nothing else comes up.
As long as nothing else comes up, he was not concerned.
Okay.
Which I really appreciated.
Okay. How did you feel going past your due date?
I didn't care at all. I had no expectation that my due date. I placed no value on the due date other than it was an idea of the around the time that the baby was going to come.
Okay. So you're chill.
So I was chill. I mean, I was
swollen.
You know, I was ready. But
yeah, but chill.
The limbo of it sort of gets to you. You know?
Did you have any false alarms? Like maybe that's it? And then it wasn't?
No,
Nothing.
Because okay. I had no labor until my water broke.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Okay.
So that's what happened on 41 weeks.
So 41 weeks, 4 a.m. So my brilliant doula had told me to get Depends, which I recommend to everyone. So you have them in the house.
Well, I'm making my Depends sponsor podcast.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or sorry. I don't even know like the non-brand.
No, I'll reach out to Depends. Yeah. Why not give them a freebie
they should.
Plug? I mean, you liked it, obviously. Genuine testimony.
Genuine testimony before and after birth. Mm-hmm. Much better than the weird wicker. Not wicked.
Oh, the ones the hospital give you?
They're horrible.
It's like gauze pad underwear.
Yeah.
But the Depends are like disposable, but underwear. I mean,
they're comfortable. And
it's like
dare
a
I
garment.
Say it, a tad sexy.
Oh my God, you like them?
No.
No.
Okay, so 4 a.m, I get like a little, twing, and I'm walking to the bathroom, and like a little bit of water comes off, and I'm like, I think my water's breaking. Go to the bathroom. Definitely water's breaking, but not that much. It wasn't like a flood. So my doula had told me to lay back down, and she had warned me this might happen. So put on the Depends, and the minute I got into bed, I laid back, and it was much more water.
Ooh, what time? What time?
This is 4 a.m.
4 a.m. That's what you said that already.
Yeah. So then I go into the bathroom, and there's meconium.
Oh. Meconium. You knew what to look for.
Yes.
You could just see it on the Depends?
I could see it on the Depends. And meconium, if your viewers or your listeners don't know, is just a fancy word for...
Poop.
Poop.
Baby poop.
Baby poop.
In the fluid.
Yeah.
Which is not terribly uncommon.
No, 25%. It's not uncommon at all. It's not a big deal. Other than the fact, this is bummer number two.
Uh-oh. Don't tell me it was pea soup.
Well, no, you have to go to the hospital.
Oh, sooner. Okay. But did you judge the meconium? Like, is this because there's different...
I sent a picture to my doula.
Okay.
Which is horrifying thing to photograph.
There's my kid's first poop, by the way, on my Depends.
It was not great. And I would not show my husband.
How could Depends not sponsor our podcast after the story?
I would not show my husband. I just described it to him.
Certain things you got to...
You got to draw the line. So we had this little booklet, so we knew what to do. And we knew that if you have, there's meconium. Listen, even if I had planned to have a home birth, if you have meconium and you have to go to the hospital anyway.
Well, it's depends. Right? I mean, different midwives, but this is the other thing about the thing. Just because you have meconium, it doesn't mean there's a problem.
No, so, not at all. It just means that they want to monitor.
Closer evaluation. So
that's a bummer because I really wanted to stay at home for a long time. So this is why.
Oh, right. That's what we talked about. You said originally you had talked about, I'm the kind of more, I think, of a home birth girl, but I'll just do home labor.
Right.
And then go to the hospital at the very end. So far you have number one, group B strep. So as soon as your water breaks, really, even with no meconium, you would have sort of had to go, is what your doctor would have wanted.
Right.
And now you have the meconium. But my one question before we go a little break, did the meconium get graded or judged as being like a lot and thick or not that bad? And
it was
and
a lot.
Oh, it was a lot. Not like pea soup.
I don't know. Yeah, kind of. I mean, it was no mistaking that it was meconium.
It was meconium. All right. Well.
And on that cliff.
I'm hanging on the cliff myself. Let's go away and come right back and get to the next step of the story. See, I'm glad we didn't talk about it yesterday. Oh, I don't like how this is starting.
Well, it's a happy ending.
I don't like how this is starting for you. That's not what I envisioned for you.
It was not what I envisioned for me either.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Gillian Schur, and after all the planning for your labor and wanting to labor at home for a long time and go to the hospital at the end, you already, just right out of the gate, are not given the greatest factors for that type of birth. So you're group B strep positive, it's 4-something in the morning, your water breaks, and it's full of meconium.
Right. What so we go to the hospital, and then our doula was so wonderful. She even beat us to the hospital. And they check you in and triage. And immediately, having a doula is so helpful because you just, I've never done this before. I don't know anything. And the thing about hospitals, and I don't want this to be an anti-hospital message. It's not. But they do what's right for them.
They have a way of doing things.
For instance, the resident came in and my doula said, you never have to see that person again. You can just work with the midwife. And I would have never known that. And so they have midwives on staff at the hospital. And so I never had to work with the new resident who's just doing their random rounds around, you know. So the only person who I had interactions with was the midwife from that point on.
So I guess it's worth noting that particular hospital is a teaching hospital.
Right.
But it's a private hospital as well. So you have the option. Some of the doctors don't work with residents at all. Some of them do. But you always have the option to not have the resident be present at all or to be present for observation only and not do any of the techniques, but just be able to be a fly on the wall and learn from watching other people. And everybody feels different about it, and there's no right or wrong. And at different times in your journey, you might want it or not want it, and it's totally okay. But that hospital also has one other option, is they always have midwives on staff to do those types of
things.
That's
great. And there's still actually nurses that take a training. They're hospital nurses that take a training to be a midwife at a hospital. So it's not like ideologically like an actual home birth midwife.
Well, there's different kinds of midwives. These are nurse midwives.
Yes.
So they become registered nurses first, and then they do advanced training to become nurse midwives.
Right. But for me, that was the better option than having the resident.
Yeah.
For me. So then we got into the room and we had this really beautiful room and it was very bright. And in hindsight, I wish I had made it darker. And
well, we talked about the candles.
I know, but I guess I thought I'd be there at night, you know, but it was like, you know, we had this incredible room, you know, the view of the Hollywood Hills, and it was by luck.
Remember? What? Which room?
I don't remember.
You don't remember what room number?
No.
But see, you're already destructing all the details.
I know.
All right, so you're in one.
So we're in the room.
Did it have a tub? I know you couldn't use
no.
it, but oh, so it wasn't a, so you had a good view, but no tub. Okay.
Yeah, view, but no tub. And they said with the meconium, I couldn't use the tub anyway, so it was a better situation. And so then I started to labor, and I was connected to this thing, and I also had the fetal monitor that they have on. You know, I asked for the wireless one, but it wasn't working, so they gave me a sort of wireless one with this weird bag that I had to carry around.
Oh, the electric box.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on, because you're doing things that only I can see.
Oh, sorry.
The thing that you're connected to, I guess, was IV.
Yes, of course.
So they put your hep lock and they give you the antibiotics?
Give me the antibiotics.
But then just a hep lock. You're not connected to a pole after that.
Well, right, unless I was getting the IV, right.
IV fluid or another dose of antibiotics.
Right.
So you have that, and then you have the monitors around your belly.
Correct.
Which probably if you're claustrophobic, those don't feel amazing either.
Not great.
And then instead of having that little tiny Bluetooth box, you have this big heavy thing that you either put around your neck and wear it or whatever. So for somebody who's not wanting
to be
inhibited and restricted and connected,
you are. It was a lot of cords.
Okay.
And so I started to labor in the waves, contractions, whatever, waves, surges, were very intense for a very long time. They were very far apart. So you could see other people's, there's a monitor in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband said that you can look at other people's monitors because when the nurse comes in, they're still monitoring other women in other rooms. And like my surges would be like mesas. If you know what a mesa is, it's a big flat mountain.
Uh-huh.
Where other people would have peaks.
Peaks and valleys.
So mine would just be very long at the height of it and then go down.
So giant plateau.
Very long plateaus.
Like how long were they lasting, you remember? Like more than a minute?
Yeah, more than a minute.
Oh, wow.
And so they were really painful, but they would be 5 minutes apart, 8 minutes apart, 5 minutes apart, 3 minutes apart. But they never got regular. And so after 12 hours, let's see. So they tried to get me to get Pitocin initially. When I first was doing triage, when I first got to the hospital, they wanted me to do Pitocin, and I said no. I wanted a natural childbirth. That was my goal, was to
we
have a natural childbirth.
We talked about it, yeah.
So
you said specifically no Pitocin, among other reasons you didn't want to interfere with the hormones that are bonding hormones with the baby.
Very important to me, right. And so my doctor kept telling me I was going to need to do the Pitocin, but the problem was now after 6 hours, the surges were so intense that Pitocin would have just made them worse.
Mm-hmm.
So then I made it to, let's see, it was 6 in the morning to 6 at night. So it was 12 hours of labor that wasn't getting anywhere. I was 2 centimeters dilated at that point. And oh, I'm going to cry thinking about it. I couldn't go any longer. I knew that I wouldn't be able to do that for another, even if they gave me Pitocin without the epidural, I couldn't go another 6 hours. That's how long it would have taken with that amount of pain. So I opted for the Pitocin and the epidural at that point, 12 hours in. And it was really hard. And my doula was so wonderful about it. And my husband was so wonderful. And they were... It was just, it was the right thing at the time. And, you know, you always hear these things like, you don't always get the birth you want, but you get the birth you need. And I think that was true with me because I have a particularly hard time asking for help. And this was like, I had to sort of humble myself and receive this epidural that I really didn't want. And so I did the epidural and went to sleep. I got some rest. It's pretty crazy. I mean, you know, and you don't even feel the contractions after that or the surges. And so that was at 6 at night. And then around 1 in the morning, it felt like things were happening. And the epidural is so intense, though. My leg was completely dead, had no movement. Like, my husband had to hold my leg up.
I mean, I've seen people who are claustrophobic freak out about that.
It wasn't great.
From a claustrophobia perspective, or just in general, just not feeling your legs at all?
In general, not feeling your legs at all. And also just not having mobility. It's not great. So then around one or two, things started to really dilate and started to get moved. And then...
How did you know if you can't feel anything?
I think they were checking.
They
must
randomly
have been
check
checking.
Your cervix, or did your contractions turn into the peaks and valleys you were looking for?
They must have, to be okay. honest. I don't remember. I was so high. I mean, you're on these crazy drugs.
Yeah.
So when it came down to start pushing, it was crazy because they ask you to push and you have so little feeling, you almost have to remember what pushing is like and then just sort of pretend like you're doing that in your head and you actually do successfully push. My body knew what to do. And so then they took down the epidural. So I actually felt the labor.
They decreased it down to like push dose or...
Yeah. So I really felt the...
You felt the contractions or the pushing or both?
Everything. Oh. Yeah. At the end. But I found it horrible with the epidural. I mean, my body was violently shaking, and that might happen with or without the epidural.
Could just be hormones.
Could just be hormones,
yeah.
You know, it's violently shaking. I was able to push her up. I had a small 2-stitch tear, which isn't bad. But when they put her on me, you know, I just think it's important to talk about this because I feel like people always say, like, it's this. Everyone told us, like, oh, when they give you your baby, your whole life changes. And, you know, to my husband, like, you're going to know what it means to be a father and you're going to know your life will have purpose. And we were both like, well, certainly I'll speak for myself. Like, I was so high and they put this baby on me and it was exactly as I was afraid of with the drugs, is I did not feel connected to this baby.
Oh.
I knew I loved her and I sort of, and I was not connected. And it was so sad. But also on the bright side, I had a totally healthy baby. I was healthy. Everyone was healthy. And at the end of the day, however you birth your kid, whether you have a cesarean or a natural or not natural or like unmedicated or medicated, the goal is you have a healthy baby and the mom has healthy and gets out of it. So really, I had to have gratitude for that. And I do.
Well, I don't know if you remember in our pre-episode or before episode while you're still swollen and preggo, I think the last question before we ended the episode, after you talked about, here's the birth that you laid out, as I recall it, go into labor peacefully at home, labor with your husband, you know, labor with your doula, stay at home as long as we get in the tub, have the glowy candles, really feel it and be able to, like, surrender to it and let it grow and intensify with you, and then towards the very end, just go to the hospital and just push your baby out.
Yeah.
Right? I asked her at the very end of that, do you, though, hold space for the fact that the plan might go differently, that things might not go exactly according to the plan? And you said, at that time, and it sounded really genuine, you said, of course. I know in my heart of hearts that having a healthy baby is going to be the most important thing to me. That is my number one goal. And I know my plan might change, and that I surrounded myself. I'm putting myself in your shoes. I surrounded myself with a doctor who I trust, and who doesn't really jump on interventions typically, and a doula who I trust and feel very safe around, and my husband who I feel very safe around. And if things have to go more interventive or down a different path than I was hoping to take, that's what I'm going to do.
And that's what I did, so.
And you sit here saying, I'm holding a healthy baby, and I'm grateful for that.
And I did, and I'm obsessed with my baby now. You know, it's.
I'm obsessed with your baby.
I know. I just think it's nice to be honest with women that you go into a different dimension. It's so powerful. It's so wild, and it might not be this hallmark moment at the other side of it, and that's okay. Sometimes you need to get to know this. There's like a new person in your life, and you need to spend some time with them. And the baby has so much need in the beginning. It's just.
Whoa, I think let's take a break and come back and talk about that phase.
Okay.
Okay. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome
Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Gillian Schur. All right, so just to close up your birth.
Yeah.
I mean, you felt pushing.
Yeah.
But you didn't like pushing just because you felt so medicated.
Well, I don't know if anyone likes pushing. I mean,
I don't know. Even though it's really intense and difficult, some people have described it as exhilarating because all of labor, you're just waiting, surrendering, not able to do anything active. And then finally you're able to push and do something, physically be a part of moving the baby down through you. And B, I think some people tap into the fact that you're doing it together. Like it's your heartbeat and the baby's heartbeat and how they change during a surge, how they change during a push. And like you're doing that together.
I would say I was not that aware. I wish I had felt more of that partnership in the moment. First of all, I will say there's a real issue with me with the hospitals is because there is meconium, there's also rules that they have to have extra doctors in the room for whatever reason.
A pediatric team.
Yes, there's a pediatric team. And for some reason, at one point I look up and there's just some random dude standing in front of my vagina watching me. And I was like, get out of here. And like, people, they just forget that this is a personal, private moment. And I find it so callous how they treat women in that stage. Like, just because I'm giving birth, I don't care that there's a strange man staring at my vagina. And I'm not a modest person, but still, like...
Well, it's a very intimate moment.
It's a very intimate moment.
What you're saying, actually, now I'm playing through all the births that I've been to, right? And I feel like... a lot of women get to a point where they really don't give a crap what's going on. They're just on another planet. And for these people, it's their all-day, everyday job. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it gets to a point where people in that room just become so, like, you could be a car being repaired, and they're just looking at the radiator, you know.
Right.
And the radiator doesn't care.
But my radiator is a vagina, and it's, you know, it's mine. And also, it's a intimate moment. It's not like a voyeuristic experience for me.
No, I'm agreeing with you 1,000%.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I could see how in that hospital setting especially, it just becomes so commonplace.
100%.
And for a lot of women that just don't care at that point anymore.
Right.
I can't tell you how many women have said, can you come to my birth and work with me up until pushing? Massage me, help me, coach me until pushing and then leave. I get that 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'll leave whenever you want me to.
Right.
If you change your mind, don't want me to leave. Or I go the other way. I'm like, if you decide you want me to leave way before then, kick me out. I don't care. But actually, what usually ends up happening in those cases is we'll get to pushing. I'll say, hey, you're doing amazing. I'm going to go now. And they'll say, you can't leave. Don't go.
Well, it's also different. They have a professional relationship with you. They have a trust with you.
Totally 100%.
You know what I mean?
So even more so, like... it's almost, I think, because we know each other that they might want me to leave.
Totally.
I'm not just a random person that they'll never see again. But then in the moment, a lot of people at some point that just disappears. And it's like, whoever's here to help me and help my baby, just gather around.
Right.
But for a lot of people, it's not like that.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the things, if you're having a hospital birth, to think through the birth plan is those people around you, your doula, your partner, because you may not be in the frame of mind to even say something. I don't know if you did or not. You said you did. But you may not be in the frame of mind to say something, but you could be thinking it and feeling it, and it could really affect your birth and mind and body. I mean, the bottom line is you're pretty liberal, open, not that shy, and it had that effect on you. So for somebody else who's a little more conservative and shy and private, modest, then, you know, it's something to think about before.
Yeah, I think so.
Before you get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, did you push for a long time?
No, it wasn't that long, maybe half an hour.
Yeah, that's not bad on your first kid. And then also, how about that after stuff, the placenta delivery and...
Well, there was a small discrepancy with me and my doctor. Well, while he had been great in a lot of different ways, I had asked for a delayed cord clamping and he cut it after a minute and a half.
Oh, really?
And he was like, your baby's going to have jaundice. And I was very upset about that. But
I'm sorry.
Again, healthy baby, you know. But it was a frustrating moment. And if I have another, it's so funny. Afterwards, I was like, why? How are no one? I would never have another kid. And already I'm like, well, when I have my next kid.
That's why your brain's destroying all these details.
I would have a conversation with him before again and say, you know, this is something that's important to me. Is this something that you're not willing to negotiate on? And that can be his right. But I was very frustrated because it was very clear about what I wanted.
I'm surprised. I mean, usually he's so does not care whatever you want goes.
Yeah.
So there was that. All right, let's talk about motherhood.
Okay.
You come home. You did not instantly feel that, like, oh, my God, I'm a mother.
No, I felt like it's all who changed. Dropped off this baby?
Oh.
And that's partly my personality is it takes me a minute to attach to things, I would say. But even more so, I was like, I really was like, did we adopt this baby? Who, where did it come from?
Oh.
Even now, sometimes I feel like that.
Yeah.
But you spend a lot of time with her, and she's really funny, and she's really
shocker
cute. And I got to know her, and I did fall in love with her. It just took me a little time, and I think that's okay. And I
it's
just
totally
want,
okay.
No, I just wish people would sort of talk about that. It's not this instantaneous
for everyone.
For everyone.
Some people, it
no,
is.
That's what I mean. For
some people,
for
it
everyone, and it's wildly difficult when you get home with a baby. You're so raw. We made the mistake of we had. Not the mistake, but, okay, I don't want to hurt their feelings, but it was a mistake. We had both of our mothers in town.
Mm-hmm. At the same time.
At the same time. And that first week especially, I was so raw. I was raw emotionally, physically, spiritually, like very thin, the separation between what you just went through, which is so magical, but so very hard. And my vagina was hurting and my body was crazy and my nipples hurt. And I didn't have the energy to give to visitors. And they were there. And it was very hard to have people in my space. I also did the thing where I intentionally kept the fourth trimester very slow. I stayed at home almost all of the time. I basically didn't leave the house except for a couple doctor's appointments and very few things.
Did that work well for you?
For me, it worked very well. Yes.
Good.
And I'm someone who usually leaves, is always doing 1,000 things, and I really didn't get stir crazy until the very end, which was about right. And then I was ready to come out.
Out of the cave.
Out of the cave.
And here you are.
And here I am.
So I guess we could say your baby is how many weeks now?
3.5 months.
So 3.5 months. So that's just in case listeners are wondering how removed you are from the story.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
Podcast magic, last time we spoke to you, you were about to pop, and now it's been 3.5 months.
And she's a really easy baby, too.
Did feeding go well for you?
Well, first of all, if men had to have babies, there would be a population of zero.
Oh,
no
absolutely.
Offense. They would never do it. It is so wildly hard.
I believe myself and almost all my friends would have a maximum of one.
Max one.
But what really would happen is we'd see our buddy do it, and we're like, there's no way we're doing that.
No. Yeah. And no one would breastfeed. Oh. And breastfeeding is very hard.
Hard to get used to or still
painful.
Hard?
Painful. No, now it's fine. I remember a girlfriend of mine, when I asked her about breastfeeding, she goes, yeah, about 2 months, it's fine. And at that point, I was 2 weeks in, and I said, 2 months? Oh, my God, for the love of God. Like, I was in so much pain.
I could genuinely feel like most women tell me you are 100% sure you're going to quit at least twice.
Oh, for sure.
Before you make
actually,
it.
That's not true. I actually never thought I was going to quit.
Never? Oh.
The only time I thought I had this thing called vasospasm, which is, you want to describe that, Doc?
Well, I've never felt it. You describe it.
It's basically like when your knuckles are cold in the winter, and it's basically like getting frostbite on your nipples. Yeah. It's like the blood vessels don't get.
Do you have Raynaud's in your hands?
Yeah.
Oh, so then people who have Raynaud's are more likely to get it while breastfeeding.
Yeah.
There's just this intense shift of blood flow, not having blood. The spasm is in the blood vessels.
Right.
So they alter where the blood flow goes and can be really painful. So it would happen to you right when you would start to feed or?
It would happen actually between feedings.
Oh, wow.
And then you have the normal like cracking and like in the beginning, it's very traumatic to look down and see your baby with a mouthful of blood from your nipples.
Oh, that's not great.
It feels not right.
Yeah, guys wouldn't do it.
No. And she has this teeny little mouth, and she's not the best latch, you know. I don't know, you know. So she always ate fine. She's a super chunky monkey. She's has not missed a meal. Like, she's a good eater. But it hurt really badly for a while. And now she's a good eater, but it's difficult for her to take a bottle. She's not great with a bottle. So that's our daily challenge, is to make sure she gets a bottle at least once a day. Because otherwise, first of all, for safety, what if something happens to me, God forbid, and she can't take a bottle, that's not great for her. But also for my freedom, it's terrifying to think that I'd be so locked into never being able to get away.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But I think she likes you.
She does. She's so cute and she's so funny and she's the best.
Gosh, I love so many of the things that you have shared.
Thank you.
That you have shared so openly. I love, unfortunately, that you needed to tap into the space you held for your birth plan changing. You know, it could have changed in other ways. It could have definitely been more off path than you thought it would be. But really, from the very beginning, you never had a chance of having that. There was a detour before you left the driveway.
Yes.
Two.
Yeah.
But you held space for it and you powered through it. I really like that you brought up, because I don't think anybody's talked about it that way, just the other people in the room. I think people think about it a lot during earlier parts of labor, but like when they put in that call, hey, we're delivering in whatever room, just like sometimes tons of people come in there. You don't know who they are. There's no time to introduce them. And we just assume you're out of it and don't care, you know, sometimes. And you probably do care. A lot of people do. So thank you for bringing that up. And then the other thing is that sometimes the baby, no matter how long or how challenging a birth is, you sometimes see that baby just come out and go on the chest and like a shell comes off of her instantly, the mother, and she's a mom. And right. She's so bonded to that baby and so removed from everything that just happened and from everything that's happening now. You're delivering the placenta and they're massaging your uterus and squeezing it to make sure that it's clotting well and just stitching you. You sometimes look at her and she's like totally removed from it and just focused on that baby and so bonded. And sometimes it's not like that at all. And that's okay too. So, and then sometimes you have bloody cracked nipples and you can power through it. And
after about 2 weeks, I called my girlfriend who had twins about 6 months before me. And I called her and I said, oh my God, I said, Elijah, you're a badass. You're amazing. She was like, I was waiting for this call.
I'll tell you what, all of you are amazing. All of you are amazing. No matter how you do it, you are all freaking amazing. It blows my mind every time. It never gets old. Being there, hearing about it, just never gets old. It's incredible what you do. I guess my last question for you is, in retrospect, I know you would have done the cord differently, but is there anything else you would have done differently?
I would have kicked those people out of the room, for sure.
The boot.
I was just kind of going along during the day, you know, assuming that I would dilate. I really should have given more respect to what I knew I needed, which was sort of darkness and more stillness, more sort of hibernation to really get into labor. I think that would have helped me more.
To go into your own space.
To go into my own space.
And settle into your labor pattern on your own. That's one of those things that it's really hard to know until you have retrospect vision. So
2020.
Hindsight. And it's 2020.
And 2020.
Thank you so much for coming and sharing and being you.
Thank you for having me.
I also remember from the first episode, you said we can find you on Instagram at Jillian Schur, but you only post like once a year. Did that change now that you have a baby?
You mean have I become
Are you posting a little more? Yeah. No. Okay.
No, but I am trying to be better about posting, but I do post. Like today I posted a picture of her not sleeping.
Oh.
Because she was not sleeping all day.
I think my wife will post a picture one day of me sleeping. Like, he slept today.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I would like to see that picture. At home, thanks as always for listening to us. If you have any topic suggestions, believe it or not, we take them and we make episodes and we do them. And they're coming in fast and furious. Don't stop. We love your suggestions and your feedback. To info@informedpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.